Well, it's nice to have Wichita Falls here, and thank goodness it wasn't one of those icy days we've had recently. I guess you all have had your share as well. We only have one case on our 10:30 docket. It is City of Wichita Falls versus Jenkins. Megan, if you'll announce counsel, please.
May it please the court, Mr. Kinley Hegland arguing for appellant, and Ms. Valerie Malone arguing for appellee.
All right, Mr. Hegland.
May it please the court, it's a pleasure to be here this morning. This is a personal injury cause of action brought pursuant to Texas Tort Claims Act, and specifically the notice provisions of the Tort Claims Act. And pursuant to a recent change in state law, Texas Government Code 311.034, the notice provisions of this act are jurisdictional in nature and must be complied with, and the burden falls upon claimant to comply with this in order to waive the city's governmental immunity in order to get to us, basically. And what we have here today is a issue dealing with notice. And did the claimant properly give notice pursuant to 101.101 of the Civil Practice and Remedies Code, the Tort Claims Act? There are two general issues here, formal notice versus actual notice. But I want to talk real briefly about 101.101B, which authorizes the city to amend the six-month time period for notice. The city did do so via City Ordinance 2-1091, and we have shortened the notice period from 6 months to 45 days. Therefore, it's clear that the claimant must get formal or actual notice to us in that time period. In this cause of action, we have one, as it relates to formal notice, I'm going to address that point. I think it's the most important point. Formal notice is written notice, and it's governed by 101.101A. And that specific statute requires, and I think it's very clear, it requires formal notice to include in writing a reasonable description of the injuries claimed. And I want to be clear here, Justices, that it doesn't say you simply must state that you're injured. It states that you must give a reasonable description of said injuries. The only formal notice document that we received in the 45-day window was a letter from Calhoun, Calhoun, and Jenkins' lawyer. And in said letter, he makes reference to the fact that he's representing plaintiffs for injuries sustained. He further says that his clients are in the process of receiving medical treatment for their injuries, and he'll let us know what's going on later, to paraphrase. We think very clearly this document does not comply with the reasonable description requirement of the Tort Claims Act. And as such, they have not followed through and have not waived immunity via formal notice. Appellants, I guess in this case appellees, have argued and I think are trying to create an argument as it relates to reasonableness and what is reasonableness. They cite case law that basically discusses and states that reasonableness does not mean full medical detail as to their description, so to speak. And we're not going to claim that they are required to give us full medical detail. We're simply asking that they give us some sort of reasonable description, and they failed to do so. And I feel that reasonableness argument is not applicable here. I think reasonableness, there's a spectrum. On one end of the spectrum, the court says, and the courts I think are clear, full medical detail is not required. But I think at the other end of the spectrum, where you have a defect as well, is when you have a claimant who does not give any description, whether it's reasonable or not. And I think that is a failure on plaintiff's part in this cause of action. So basically we're saying no formal notice in this case, pursuant to the clear and express language of 101.101A. That being said, I want to focus on actual notice. Actual notice is defined by the statute 101.101C, and it's been looked at by the Texas Supreme Court very recently. In 2004, the Texas Department of Criminal Justice v. Simmons, the Texas Supreme Court looked at and tried to explain to us what actual notice is. And that court, the Texas Supreme Court, told us that actual notice means the government unit having knowledge that they are required to and should have pursuant to 101.101A, and in the subjective awareness of fault, of course, was, I think, the focus of Simmons. But still, they very clearly say that we, for actual notice, must have the information we get under formal notice. Therefore, to get actual notice, I think the city would have to have actual notice of some sort of injury and a reasonable description of that injury. The evidence in this case is very clear as to actual notice, I believe. It was a car wreck. Mm-hmm. Officer Becknell was the driver of the city vehicle. His sergeant came out, and risk management supervisor came out. So Martha Shaw, Officer Becknell, and Sergeant Wright were all present. The affidavits of these three individuals are on the record, and it's very clear from the evidence that they were the only three city employees present at the time of the automobile accident. Sergeant Becknell talked to and observed the occupants of the vehicle, including the appellees, Calhoun, and Jenkins, and they did not tell him they were injured. He did not observe any injuries. Martha Shaw observed all the occupants of the automobile accident. She did not observe any injuries, nor did she hear them tell her that they were injured. And I think the most important piece of evidence in this case is Sergeant Wright's testimony, in which he swears under oath in an affidavit that he talked to Calhoun, and Jenkins, and he asked each of them specifically, "Are you hurt or injured?" And they very expressly and they were very clear, and they said, "No, we are not hurt. We are not injured." The sergeant in his police report, which is part of the evidence before this court, wrote in his police report that all the occupants had no injuries. The injury code was N for none, and he stated in also that they left on their own volition. They were not carried away to via an ambulance, nor did they go to the hospital. So that being said, I think the evidence is crystal clear in this case that the city had not only no actual notice of a reasonable description of an injury, but in fact, the actual notice we had was that the plaintiffs were not injured. And that being said, there cannot be any way to attribute actual notice onto the city in this cause of action.
What isn't the letter from the attorney can attribute, inform them of injury?
The letter is formal notice, and it's such
no,
as...
Why isn't it actual notice?
Well, the legislature created two different types of notices. They created formal notice under 101-101A, and they created actual notice under 101-101C. It's very clear that they're two separate types of notice. And formal notice is written notice. C is actual notice, which I think really is personal knowledge, is really what we're talking about. A government unit can't have personal knowledge as an entity, but it can get personal knowledge via its employees. The employees have personal knowledge of the incident, of the facts we're talking about. In this case, the employees did not have personal knowledge of a reasonable description of the injuries. What we have, I think you're addressing, is does the defective formal notice somehow give the city actual notice? I think that's the question you're getting at. Is that correct?
Yes.
And I think it does not, because they're two separate entities. Basically, what we have is a hearsay statement, if you look at it that way, a letter from an attorney relating to his clients telling the city that his client is injured but not describing the injuries does not give personal knowledge to any city employee. And I think there's a clear distinction between the written document 101-101A and personal knowledge 101-101C. And I think they're two distinct methods of notice, and they can't be overlapped. I don't think that was the intent of the legislature when they passed this statute. And I think the rules of construction, when you look at statutory construction, look at and require us to separate them out. Does that address your issue?
Yes, except that you made a couple of references to personal knowledge and hearsay, which is sounding like you're saying the evidence that the knowledge that they acquire for actual knowledge has to be admissible evidence.
Well, I think really what you're looking at, you have to ask yourself, what is actual notice? And actual notice is something different from a written notice. And so you have to ask yourself, what does that mean? Written notice is clear, something in writing, a document presented to the city clerk. I guess what I'm saying is that written notice doesn't constitute actual notice, and it can't constitute actual notice. They're different creatures.
Well, okay, suppose that the client's the parties themselves had written that letter saying they were injured and still under medical treatment. Would that suffice as actual notice?
I see your point about the admissibility. I think what would constitute actual notice, if a week later we went to the hospital, one of our officers went to the hospital, or risk management officers or employees, and they said, "Miss Calhoun, how are you feeling?" And Miss Calhoun said, "I've got a hurt back, my leg is broken, and, you know, et cetera, et cetera." That would be actual knowledge. And I don't think that a letter written from an attorney or even a client constitutes actual knowledge. I think the two are separate, and they're intended to be separate. Any written document falls under formal notice under 101-101A. And even if they had, and even if you go down that road and you say, yes, the letter constitutes actual knowledge, the letter doesn't meet the requirements of 101-101A. It's defective, and it clearly doesn't describe the injuries for actual notice. And as I said, Simmons makes it very clear that you're required to get the same information for actual notice that you're entitled to get for formal notice. And so if that letter is defective for formal notice, it must also be defective for actual notice. It does not reasonably describe the injury.
So the trial judge is wrong in the order overruling the pleaded the jurisdiction when he says that 101C, it looks like he's quoting it, says the notice requirements for A and B do not apply if the governmental unit has actual notice that a claimant has received some injury.
If the claimant has actual notice, and that's the thing, and that's why I cite Simmons, because Simmons is very clear in what it tells us. The Texas Supreme Court is very clear, and it tells us that actual notice requires the same knowledge to be given to the city that we would have gotten under formal notice. And I think that's a very clear ruling coming from the Texas Supreme Court. And so that I think that basically when you read that, that means for actual notice, not only must we have knowledge of an injury, actual knowledge of an injury, we must have a reasonable description of said injury.
But that doesn't seem to serve any purpose. Why does it matter if you know that they have medical injuries or they're receiving medical care for personal injuries versus specifically a cut on the left ankle, a fractured wrist? I mean, that doesn't seem to promote any of the purposes of the underlying the Tort Claims Act.
It does in that when I prepare for a case and I get a claim, I've got so many other things to do. I have to basically triage these claim letters, and I have to decide when do I use my resources and when do I not. And I use the description of the injury to help me determine when a case is going to be needed to be worked up immediately. On a big case, broken leg compound fracture, serious bodily injury or death, we will talk to every city employee there. We'll talk to first responders. We'll talk to firemen, policemen, risk managers, and we'll try to contact third-party citizens who witnessed it. And we will go to a great effort to try and develop the case early on while the memories are fresh. If I get a claim that says I cut my finger, I'm not going to put those resources into trying to develop the case that I would on a more serious cause of action. And I think that does serve the purposes of this act. The act is supposed to, I think, and intended to give notice to the city so that we can decide how best to utilize our limited resources to defend the community's wealth, so to speak. We only have so much money, and we have to figure out the best ways and the most efficient ways to address the issue. And it might not make perfect sense, but the statute is very clear. I think it's very express. The Texas Supreme Court was also very clear in their definitions and explanations of what actual notice is. And based upon the plain meaning of the rules and the clear authority from the Supreme Court, I think that the claimants have failed to comply with the Tort Claims Act, and it's a jurisdictional issue. And they lose.
I have a question. Can you go to the hearing? There was a hearing held in September.
Yes.
And was there any testimony taken at the hearing, or
no?
Are you all relying on these two or three affidavits?
I'm relying upon the affidavits of Sergeant Becknell, of Officer Becknell, Sergeant Wright, and Ms. Shaw.
Okay. So
as well as the city ordinance.
Three affidavits. And were those admitted?
Yes.
So they are in the record. I haven't pulled the record
yes.
yet. Okay.
They were attached to my plea of the jurisdiction as exhibits and were admitted thereof.
Okay.
They are.
I have another procedural question. Isn't it true that the city went ahead and paid for the car?
Yes, and that's a good question. We had actual notice of the accident.
Exactly.
We had actual notice of property damage. And we even had possibly a subjective awareness of fault for the property damage. And they complied with the Tort Claims Act notice requirements as it relates to property damage. I don't have any problem with that. What we're talking about here is a personal injury cause of action.
When you read 101.101C, it says that the notice requirements above don't apply if the governmental unit has actual notice that death has occurred, that the claimant has received some injury, or that the claimant's property has been damaged. So you're saying that you can have actual notice of the accident and actual notice of the property damage, but somehow
not have actual notice of the personal injury. In fact, they told us they weren't injured. I think that's true, and I understand where you're coming from there.
There's one actual notice. Is there any case that holds that you have to have two actual notices? You have to have actual notice of a property damage. You have to have actual notice of a personal injury. You have to have actual notice of damage to someone's yard. You have to have...
That is an interesting question, and there is no case law on that point. But I think, in all fairness to the city, that there should be in the one notice, and it should cover, and the claimant should write a good enough notice so that it covers all the claims they're planning to bring against you. If they're going to bring a personal injury, they should follow the notice requirements for personal injury. If they're going to bring property damage, they should give us actual notice of property damage. And if they're going to bring both, I think the intent was that they put us on notice of both property damage and injury. And in this case, there was no notice of injury. So I understand what you're saying, but I don't have a case. If I did, I would be telling you about it. It's a new area of law. This jurisdictional issue only came up in 05, 06. So we're kind of, y'all are going to be creating new law here, I guess, hopefully. So.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Hegland.
Okay, thank you.
Ms. Malone.
May it please the court. My name is Valerie Malone, and I represent Summer Calhoun, Sheila Calhoun, and Alfred Jenkins. There's really just one issue before the court today, and that is, did the City of Wichita Falls have notice of Appley's claims sufficient to meet the Texas Tort Claims Act requirements? And the answer to that question is yes, it did. The City of Wichita Falls could have had either notice. Either they can have a statutory notice, or they can have actual notice. They only need one notice. And here, they had both. Now, I think that it's important to kind of go back over the facts here. Here's what the City of Wichita Falls did know. They knew that their police officer rear-ended the Calhoun's vehicle. They knew that a supervising sergeant police officer came out to investigate that car wreck, and that the supervising police officer found that their police officer was at fault for rear-ending the Appley's car. The City of Wichita Falls also sent out their risk safety manager to investigate the collision. So they also have their risk safety manager right there at the scene. The police report includes numerous details. It tells us the date, time, and location, the diagram of the accident, the parties involved, the occupants, lots of information. Then, just 5 days after that collision, Appley's counsel sent to the City of Wichita Falls a letter notifying them that, look, the Appley's were injured in this wreck. And we described the wreck with specificity. And we told them they are receiving medical treatment right now for the injuries that were caused from your police officer rear-ending this car. That's notice. 19 days after the collision, 2 weeks after that notice letter was sent, the city's risk safety manager, Martha Shaw, who had been at the scene of the wreck, then sends Summer Calhoun a letter and Appley's counsel, and the letter states that it was sent in response to the claim filed with the City of Wichita Falls. Ms. Shaw also said, hey, I've already completed our investigation. And she agreed to honor the property damage claim in the amount of over $4,000. Once the Appley's completed their medical treatment, as promised in the notice letter, Appley's counsel sent to the City of Wichita Falls a letter along with medical records and medical bills, a settlement demand. and sent it to the City of Wichita Falls, and the City of Wichita Falls' response was, sorry, we didn't have any statutory notice of this claim, but we also didn't have any actual notice of the claim. And so they denied the claim. Plaintiffs were then forced to file the lawsuit in this case, and then the City of Wichita Falls filed their plea to the jurisdiction, which the trial court denied, and the City of Wichita Falls has thus appealed. Now, on the first, sub-question, is statutory notice. Did the City of Wichita Falls have statutory notice here, formal written notice? If we look at the Texas Tort Claims Act, I think it becomes clear that they did. It says that a claimant must send written notice to the governmental entity that reasonably describes the damage or injury claimed, the time and place of the incident, and the incident. Now, the City of Wichita Falls also has an ordinance. That ordinance shortens the time period in which a claimant should notify the City of Wichita Falls, and that's shortened to 45 days, very short time period. The city's argument, I think that if I understand this correctly, is that it basically comes down to did the appellees reasonably describe their injuries to the city? So I guess the appellees and the City of Wichita Falls are at odds over what constitutes a reasonable description. And in this case, most specifically, does that May 13th letter sent 5 days after the collision provide a reasonable description of appellee's damage or injury claimed? And it does, because the notice letter, as I said before, tells them we're injured from this wreck, appellees are injured from this wreck, here's the wreck we're talking about, and they're right now receiving medical treatment for that. There is not one single case to support that anything more than that is required. Now, the city does try to draw an analogy, and they do that with an unpublished opinion out of the Court of Appeals, 14th District in Houston. And that case is the Casanova v. Tomball Regional Hospital Authority. And comparing that case to this case, really it's like comparing apples to oranges. Because in that case, the letters that were at issue were the medical records and billing records requests that you send to every medical provider in every personal injury case. And that was sent to the defendant hospital in that case. Well, the court looked at that and said, well, that has nothing to do with notifying the hospital that there's any potential claims against it. The letters in that case simply stated that the undersigned represents the appellant for injuries she sustained on a particular date. That's it. And you could tell in that case the plaintiff was grasping for straws. They forgot to send the notice, and now they're looking back. Is there anything that we sent? Oh, okay, we sent these requests for billing records and medical records. Maybe we can bootstrap that to a notice. But the court held that the letters did not describe the incident at all. The resulting injury or damage claimed, and there is absolutely, and this was the key part, there's absolutely no indication to the hospital that it was responsible for anything. In this case, Appley's formal written notice did meet the statutory requirements. Notwithstanding, I don't think that there's any argument that the city certainly had actual notice of Appley's claims here. If it's the wording reasonably described that the city is taking issue with, well, then there's no problem on actual notice because that language is not in subsection C of the Texas Tort Claims Act. If we look at and that's the provision that deals with actual notice. If we look at the plain language of the Texas Tort Claims Act, it states that statutory notice is not required if the governmental entity had actual notice that a death occurred, that the claimant has received some injury. They just have to have notice that they have received some injury, or that claimant's property has been damaged. And I disagree with the city on what the Texas Supreme Court said in Simmons and also said in Kathy v. Booth. I'll quote, we hold the actual notice to a governmental unit requires knowledge of a death, injury, or property damage, along with the other information that's not at issue here. Actual notice, it's enough that the city knows that the appellees have been injured here. The city has repeatedly said, here's what happened at the scene. Our officer was there, our supervising officer was there, our risk safety manager was there, and none of them saw any injuries whatsoever. And so, therefore, we can't be put on notice. And I guess I didn't really get where he was coming from until I just heard the argument today on he's dissecting, he's kicking out this notice letter. But we're not going to look at just at the scene. They created a 45-day window, a very short window. And so as long as there's some notice within that 45-day window, then that's sufficient. We can't just look at the scene. And 5 days after the collision, we've got the notice letter. Also, we have the investigation by Martha Shaw. We have her responding letter. And so there's more resources, as the city said, being used. I mean, they have already used resources here. I understand that they pigeonhole their cases according to the severity of injury, but good grief, we've already used a supervising sergeant police officer, risk safety manager, and we've already done an investigation. The case law is contrary to the city's position. This court in Tarrant County Hospital District versus Ray in 1986, affirming the district court's jury instruction, the actual notice, and I quote, does not require a description of the nature and extent of the injury in full medical detail. There are several other cases, Austin Court of Appeals, San Angelo versus Smith. Nothing in the act requires the governmental entity to be absolutely certain of the injury's nature and cause, or that it even knows that the injured party intends to bring a suit or a claim. The City of San Antonio versus Johnson, which I think is very applicable here, it's a 2003 case out of the Court of Appeals of San Antonio. Nothing requires the governmental entity to be absolutely certain of the injury's nature and cause. And then out of the 14th District Court of Appeals in Houston, the same Court of Appeals in the unpublished case of Casanova, we do not interpret the notice provision as requiring a claimant to provide a full medical detail of the nature and extent of his injury. Now, I know that the city has said, look, there's a spectrum here. Over here, we've got full medical detail. And then as far as defect, over here, we have not sufficient notice of the injury. I don't think that's the case at all. I think over here on this end of the spectrum, we have no notice at all. We have notice here. I think the two cases that are the most applicable to the issue before the court is the one, City of San Antonio versus Johnson. It's a 2003 case out of the San Antonio Court of Appeals. And in that case, the defendant drivers, they brought a contribution claim against the city because there was something in the police report that said there was a police officer that made an improper U-turn, and so therefore we think that he caused the wreck. Well, when the city gets into the case, much like the arguments here, city says, you know, we just didn't have sufficient notice that the claimants were injured because on the police report, all it said was that there was a Code C possible injury and that the claimants intended to go to the, intended to seek medical treatment. Well, here, the city has much more than that. We tell them that, yes, they are injured. Not that there's a possible injury. Yes, they are injured. And we don't say we intend to go to the doctor. We say they are receiving medical treatment for their injuries. So the facts are much more compelling here. I also think that City of Dallas versus Carbajal, which is one of the most recent cases, it is the most recent case on this issue, 2009 case. In that case, plaintiff drove into a big pothole or gap in the roadway, and something in the police report said that that the city may should have barricaded that pothole. And so the plaintiff brings a claim against the City of Dallas, and the most important thing there was the only information that the city had about the plaintiff's injuries was that she was in the care of the hospital with unknown injuries. That was enough. That was enough for the city's plea to the jurisdiction to be denied, and it was enough for the Court of Appeals to affirm that decision. In this case, if we look at all the other cases and the facts that were known to the governmental entities in those, the City of Wichita Falls has far more facts, information, and details about this particular incident and claim than in any of those other cases. I think that it's important to also not lose sight of the purpose of the statute. The purpose of the statute is to enable the government so that they're not taken by surprise. So because they have all these employees that represent the city and work for them, we don't want them to be taken by surprise. We want them to know, hey, there's some injury that was caused. There's potential liability exposure here. And so the purpose is to enable the government units to gather information necessary to guard against unfounded claims settle claims and to prepare for trial. In this case, the city was in that position. In fact, they did investigate. They were able to prepare and to gather information. I think that another thing is one of the most troubling aspects that I have is sort of this slippery proposition on what is enough, this more detail. And if a claimant is required to give more details, what is more? Does more include all possibilities, all possible injuries? Is a claimant boxed into only the more which they told him about? Will a claimant need a medical expert to advise them to cover all of its bases on the more? Will more have as many different meanings as are our courts? And if the legislature had wanted more, why wouldn't they have provided us with it, and why would they give us the exception on actual notice? I don't think we kick out the letter. I can't find any support for that in any case law. And for these reasons, appellees pray that the court will affirm the district court's decision in denying the city's plea to the jurisdiction. Thank you.
I have a couple questions. On this letter from Ms. Shaw, that was received by the plaintiffs within the 45-day window as well?
Yes, Your Honor.
And was the property damage actually settled within the 45 days?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. So it's your position, first of all, that you gave sufficient actual notice?
Yes, Your Honor.
I mean, written notice?
Yes, Your Honor.
Under A. But then your alternative position is that regardless of that, they had actual notice anyway.
That's right, Your Honor.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Hagelin.
I just wanted to address just a couple issues. Appellee is discussing what constitutes reasonable description. She says that's a key issue in this case, and we're at odds over what constitutes a reasonable description. And I think that's their issue that they're most in error on. There is no reasonable description in their notice letter. They did not attempt to give a description, and there is no reasonable description. And I think that's an issue I want to bring up to the court. That there is no description or reasonableness to argue about, since no such description exists in the formal notice letter. Appellee discusses the fact that they did give notice that would have complied with the Tort Claims Act later. And they did do that. After the 45 days had passed, they had 85 days late. They gave us an updated letter 4 months after the accident that fully described in medical detail. But those letters that they sent were late, and they do not constitute a waiver of immunity in this cause of action. Do y'all have any questions? I think that's all I really have. I don't have. I think we've talked about everything. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Hagelin. Thank you, Ms. Malone. We appreciate your arguments today. We appreciate you coming to Fort Worth, and we thank you for your briefing as well. Your case is submitted. We will now adjourn court.